Welcome to the Brown Posey Press Show, part of the Books Big Network, a program dedicated to independent and self-published authors. This show will examine new and unique works of literature, learn about their creators, and discuss the industry. And now your host, Tori Gates.
Recently, I appeared at Cleveland Concoction in Aurora, Ohio, and for the authors, there were numerous panels and discussions. I served as moderator for one, Structuring Your Story. I was joined by Addie King, Jeffrey Landis, Marie Vibert, and Weston Kincaid. They will make their introductions in part one of this roundtable discussion. I decided to roll tape on this, and apart from minor edits for clicks, pops, and redundancy, you will hear the full discussion plus questions from the audience. This is going to be from several different perspectives of how do we put our stories together, where do we put the building blocks, what do we use, what kind of tools, and I think you're going to find that every single one of us is going to be completely different when it comes to how we do these things. But I think we will have a few similarities. I have a few questions that I will ask folks, but before we begin, I'm going to have everybody introduce themselves. I'm your moderator. I am Tori Gates. I am the author of several new/young adult works of fiction. I have a trilogy called The Sweet Dream Series. All of my works are in Author's Alley. You can find me through Sunbury Press Books. You can also find me through Amazon.com. And I also host a podcast, one of these, on the BookSpeak Network. So that is me. Tell us who you are.
My name is Addie King. I am the author of the Grimm Legacy series. I'm the author of the Hockenwalt Files series. I am also now an editor. Last year I edited an anthology that came out by the name of Never Too Old to Save the World, and we're working on a follow-up right now called Last Apocalypse Before Bedtime. So I'm also in my day job an attorney. I do trial work and appellate work. I do criminal law and family law and a whole bunch of other stuff like that.
I'm Jeffrey Landis. I'm a science fiction writer sometimes and a scientist the rest of the time. I've had a couple of books come out, but I'm mostly a short story writer.
Okay.
I had a couple of short stories out last year and then won a couple of awards here and there in the science fiction field. So happy to talk about story structure.
Okay. I'm Marie Vibert. I have over 90 short stories in various magazines, Lightspeed, Clark's World, Analog, places like that. I have three novels, and I was a Hugo and Nebula finalist last year. And by day, I'm a computer programmer.
All right. And this gentleman down here.
Weston Kincaid. I'm a horror and mystery and fantasy author. I've got 8 books out, quite a few short stories published. I lost count, 20, 30, something. But at some point, it's kind of like age. I just said, it happens. I'm just a fiction author primarily and a teacher by day.
All right. The way I decided to put this together was everybody has their own style, and let's see if any of these questions will either ring a bell or will have something to expand upon. And I'll just take it from one end around to the other. This is a question that I've had asked before. Are you a plotter or are you a pantser? Do you plot your stories out? Or do you just go? Who would like to take that?
Go for it.
Yeah, I've tried both ways. I think I've been mostly successful when I know where the story is going before I start writing it. Mm-hmm. But I've tried the other way around, just sort of writing something and saying, see where it goes. And when it works, I can be quite happy with it. But what I find really annoying is when you get like 8,000 words into a story and then you don't know what happens next. So I've mostly given that up and have turned into I want to know where it's going before. I don't need to know every little twist and turn, but I sort of want to know what the resolution I'm building toward is going to be.
Okay.
I would say I'm, a planter?
Yeah, seat of the pants.
Well, but it's both, okay? So I wrote a lot of fiction when I was in high school. I was on the school newspaper and all that. When I hit law school, I went into my first legal writing class, and I was like, if nothing else, I know what I'm doing here, right? The teacher walked out, looked at all of us, and went, if you have any background in creative writing, you will struggle in this class. And I went, she's full of it. There's no way. And she was right. You had to learn how to write structure in order to write a good legal argument. And so with all of the legal writing I do now, it's, yeah, the best arguments are the ones that are set up in the structure that they taught us how to do in law school. It actually made me a better fiction writer because you start thinking in structure when you're thinking about plot. Because when you sit down to write, whether it's for my day job or at night, you're actually thinking of, okay, I have this idea, how can I hang it on the coat hanger to make it work? At the same time, I don't plot the books all the way through. I generally plot about the first third of the book, and then I have a direction that I'm going. And while that direction might change, depending on how things are going, and as I learn more about the characters and all of that, I still have, you know, kind of the first third of the book planned and direction I'm heading in. So that's kind of how I end up doing it, mm-hmm. which makes writing synopsises before you finish a novel really, really weird. So.
All right. How about you?
It's a false dichotomy. There is no such thing as a plotter. There is no such thing as a pantser. It's a question of when you are doing the hard work of making decisions. All writing is making decisions about what you're saying and what your story is about. Either you make those decisions consciously before you start, or you make some decisions consciously before you start, and you subcontract to your subconscious for parts of it. A lot of people like to just, you know, think their way through a story before they even start writing. But it's all just work. That's my opinion.
Mine's very similar to Addie's approach. I generally have to be inspired. You know, so I'll, as writers, I'm sure we all get these ideas that, you know, they grip us and we're going, oh, I want to write that. And you start writing that story, whether you've, you know, whatever it is, you're just writing that scene that comes to mind. At least that's how I do it. And then once I've got that scene set up, then all of a sudden it gives me the other little tidbits I need to flesh out the world around it and start actually putting it into a guided plot, you know, structure, which I'll get about two-thirds of the book structured out from that after I've written a few chapters, and then I'll just start continue writing along those guidelines and then fill out the ending as it comes to me as I'm doing it. So.
Well, I do admit that I plot, and a lot of the time it's once I get the idea, which is something we're going to tackle in a moment, once I know that I've got something, that I've got like at least a very basic premise, and usually what that comes about with is I will have three or four different threads of ideas that you don't think should fit and make no sense, but you put them together and all of a sudden they just knot up and you can't get rid of them. And for me, mostly to keep track of how I am progressing with the story is I will begin, first of all, by not doing anything. I will literally just let a story cook in my head for anywhere from a few months to a couple of years. And just think about the different, who are these different characters that are showing up and what do they want? You know, why are they here? What is their point and all?
So, Tori, I have a question on that.
Yeah.
If you don't mind.
Sure.
Do you have more than one story cooking at once?
Yes.
And does that help?
Sometimes it does because it allows you to break them up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you sort of realize that certain people fit and certain ones don't. And for me, it becomes, okay, who is this person? And sometimes my characters are not based on one person. They're based on several people or just imaginative things. And so I have occasionally just in my mind had a character just show up completely fully formed looking at me and going, put me in your book. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, who are you? What do you want? It's like, what? And so I will go through character sketches. I will sketch out the names of the characters, their age, how tall are they, what do they look like, what do they wear, what are their distinguishers, what about them makes them unique, why are they in the story? And usually I'll just end up writing more pieces about, well, this is why this person is here, and that's mostly to keep my head together around it. So I'll have that, and then my storyline is a separate document, and I will do the chapter one, this should happen, chapter two, this should happen, chapter three, this should happen, and of course I don't follow that because the story won't do that. It won't walk in line. So then it's just going back through and fitting it out, and once I have, I would say, two-thirds to all of the story sort of plotted out as to where we're supposed to be, then I write. And so that can take a long time. But to me, that's actually part of the fun, because you're creating, even if it's real time, you're creating the universe that that person is in and the one that you're about to fall into. So I just have a lot of fun with that.
Tori, can I add something to that?
Please do.
Because I love where you're going with it. And it's something that I actually recently discovered through a conversation with some friends. But one of the approaches to writing that I've noticed that's very different, and it's like polar opposites, is I'm very character focused, and it sounds like you are too. You focus on, you got to visualize that character first, and then the world around them, and it builds out from there. Whereas other writers that I've encountered, some of them are world focused starting out, and then they figure out the people that exist within that world afterwards. And that's I didn't even think about approaching it in a different way like that. Like, how much does that play into yours? Are you character based more, or?
Yes.
There's a teaching technique for talking about structuring story, which is called the Meist method, where you identify what's most important to the story. It could be the milieu, the world, it could be an idea, it could be the character, or it could be an event-based story. And I do them all. And depending on what's most important in the story, is it's the story about character growth? Is this a story about the human condition? In which case, then you know that your beginning has to begin with introducing the character, and your ending has to be that character's arc resolving. If it's a milieu story, your introduction has to be introducing the world, and you know your ending is either you change the world, you restore the world, or you leave the world. If it's an idea story, which most of my short stories tend to be, you know, you start with a question. What if, what if we had hot dogs for fingers? Doesn't matter. But you ask a question, and then the story ends with the answer to that question.
You know, and I'm going to jump back in on that a little bit, if
please
that's
do.
Okay.
Of course.
I have a tendency to start with idea, okay? What's the cool factor? What is the thing that has me interested, whatever it is? And it could be, you know, werewolf police officers. It could be werewolf flea control. It could be slaying demons with Yoo-Hoo and ding-dongs. It could, how do I work that into a, this is the cool idea, whatever it is that I start with. Now, that doesn't mean that the setting or the character isn't more important once the story gets figured out, but I start with that kernel of what is that cool thing idea. Okay, well, if I've got this cool thing idea, what do I want to do with it? And then it's, okay, so I go from that idea to, okay, can I write a one sentence for the beginning, middle, and end? Okay, so, okay, I have a very, very basic arc at that point, and then I can start hanging more detail on it and go from there. It's almost like snowflaking a novel, if you've ever heard of that, kind of like fractal mapping to get to your idea. And yes, there is a book out there on that. It is actually a good idea for somebody who's having a hard time figuring out how to get from the cool idea to how do I get from there to a story outline or a story structure. Now, I started doing that, and I will still do that when I'm starting out a book, but I generally don't have to go too much further than that before I'm off and running with the story, whether it ends up being about the idea or the character that came up as I'm doing that. But it's a good starting place to get from, I want to write about space lasers, or I want to write about, you know, I don't know.
Hot dogs for fingers.
Yes. Yeah. Fairy tales in law school, like whatever it might be. you know, and to get from whatever that idea is to, okay, how am I going to tell a story about it? And so I tend to do that and then kind of figure it from there.
Yeah, I feel like one of the things I keep finding myself saying to people when they're like, oh, I have an idea for a story, is like, ideas aren't stories.
Yeah.
I mean, ideas aren't stories, words aren't stories. Stories are an emotional payload delivered through structure.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't structure your story, if it doesn't have a beginning and a middle and an end, it's not going to feel satisfying to the reader. It's not going to meet the reader's expectations. It's just going to be words on a page.
Yeah, it's not even going to meet the definition of a story.
Yeah.
Because it won't have that story arc, etc.
Interesting. I think the next question, we may have already answered some of this. Making friends with your characters or getting close to them, that is one of the things that I've found that really works for me, is that you really have to know what your characters are like. You have to know what their attitudes are, their behaviors are, so that you can differentiate them and you don't have a number of people all acting the same, unless that's what you want them to do. And I talked a little bit about how I sketch my characters out, and one of the things I was given this idea like years ago. I was interviewing a musician that had just put out an album, and he talked about how these are new songs that I would like people to get close to and really like them and really feel them. And I was like, ooh, that's kind of cool. And I began to realize years ago when I started writing the Sweet Dream series that I had to really get to know the characters, and I really had to spend some time with them and find out what are they like. I would interview them. I would just have long discussions with them. I would put different characters in a room, so to speak, and let them talk. That led to series, like parts of the series that led to scenes that was like, oh, hey, that was a good conversation. They do have something alike, so they might need to talk. We might need to develop that. How do you keep your characters in line? How do you get to know them, and what kind of methods do you use?
I'm going to start with that, and I'm going to say you don't have to be friends with all your characters, but you have to know them very well. And I say that because you're writing not just your protagonist, but also your antagonist. You're writing the good guy and the bad guy in your story, and so you don't have to like your characters, but you have to understand them. And so there's a character in my Grim Fairy, Grim Legacy series that I never really figured out why he did some of the things he did. And then I realized, you know what, this character is actually like several hundred years old. I'm not going to figure out everything he wants to do. And he's been a frog for several hundred years. So there's a whole lot of
Being a frog.
And some trauma, believe it or not. I mean, if you're cursed into an animal shape for lots and lots of years, there's a whole lot of stuff you haven't been able to do in a long time. How do you flirt with a girl? How do you figure out how to drive a car? How do you honk a horn? You know, and knowing as a human that you want to do these things, you know you should know how to do these things, but you are not big enough to pull these things off. And so the funny part is the frog became such a big deal in the series, and I always knew when we needed more of the frog, but at the same time, I don't know that I would have been friends with him if it was somebody I met in real life. You know what I mean? He was just so off the wall. I wrote about an alcoholic talking frog.
But, I mean, piggybacking on what you're saying, though, yeah, you're exactly right, because you have to not just know them as people. Mm-hmm. You have to know their motivations, mm-hmm, their reasons for existing, for doing anything. And that's why, like, whenever I do it, mm-hmm, and whenever I'm writing a book, I flesh out the background of the characters. You know, go into what their motivations are, whether they're from an abused or broken home, whether there's, you know, what did they deal with in their life that could then affect their decision-making later on, you know, and so, I mean, it's exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
I'm the complete opposite. I don't do any... There's no background to my characters other than what's on the page. I don't spend time thinking about them outside of the story. I don't write backgrounds for them. the character is a part of the story. Maybe that means because all the characters are just me, but I also think that, you know, people are people, and we're not that different. And generally, if I was going to give a character sketch for a character, you know, it's going to sound pretty, it's going to sound pretty banal. It's going to sound pretty flat, you know. When I first started writing, I used to constantly, like, write long backstories, and I'd have people's family trees and everything that happened to them. And what I found was, with all of that careful work and thought into making nuanced characters, they were mushy and boring, and everyone was the same. So now I lean more into archetypes. I have sassy characters, and I have, I can't tell you how many times I've written, you know, the sarcastic character, the...
Like a rebellious teen?
No, I don't tend to, well, I haven't really done rebellious teen. It's more like, you know, the sassy sex-positive sex robot. Or the sarcastic professional thief, or, you know, the caring dad, or the, you know, the caring dad who's has a daughter with autism, and so yeah, my character sketches are that long; they're like a sentence.
Wow, does that make your writing? Does it streamline your process? Does it make it go quicker?
I like to churn my stuff out. I like to be productive. Yes, I mean, I'm focused on the end product. I am writing a novel, or I am writing a short story. I'm writing a short story that's going to be between 2,000 and 5,000 words long, or I'm writing a novelette. So, yeah, if there's something I need to decide about the character, you know, I have my plot structure that I decided on. I have my little outline. I know how I want to end. I know what the emotional payload is. And along the ways, if I need to add dimension to the character, I do it as I go. And I'm like, you know, oh, I need to explain why, you know, she left the bedroom when her husband was dying. Instead of staying with him, okay, she's germophobic. I don't know. Or afraid of death. This is me thinking ahead of time. That's why I'm saying, like, all of the work of writing is decision making. And it's really a question of when you make the decision, not there's it's not, that's why I say it's a false dichotomy to say pantser versus plotter. When I plot out my stories, I'm making some decisions ahead of time to make it easier to write the story, to save work later. And when I don't, I end up having to make decisions later.
Okay. I get it. Sir?
Yeah, but I think there is a difference between making decisions and then writing to those decisions, and then writing and finding out what those decisions are. That's sort of a different feel of going about it. Stories do have sort of an arc or a structure, and even if I don't have a plot laid out, I often have a structure laid out. The idea that this story is moving in a circle. You come around and then you come back to where you started from. Mm-hmm. That's a structure. A more standard structure that you see a lot in science fiction, including mine, mm-hmm. is the sort of the old idea of a character has a problem, and as they try to solve it, it gets worse and worse until there's a climactic crisis. And that's the whole idea of the climax of the story.
So you're talking about like the try-fail cycles.
Yeah, it can be that. Dave Smith used to call it, there's an out-of-whack event. The character is fat and happy and living well in their character's world, and then something happens and whack! The world is suddenly out of whack, and they have to adapt to it, change it, mm-hmm. or die. Those are your choices. Mm-hmm. Adapt, change the world, or die. And just sort of knowing that structure, that this is the type of story, that things are going to get worse. and whatever your character tries to do, it isn't good enough because there's yet another twist coming in.
When we return, more of the Klecon Roundtable structuring your story when the Brown Posey Press Show continues.
Sunbury Press Books brings you the work of independent authors. If fiction, whether historical, murder mysteries, or spy thrillers take your fancy, check out Milford House Press. Releases of interest include The Class Assignment is Murder by Carolyn Kleinman, Dead Man Who Walks Away, Parts 1 and 2 by Herbert Dean Ely, or The Immigrant's Wife by J.B. Brooks. Explore by clicking on the Milford House tab at sunburypress.com.
We're back, and the Klecon Roundtable continues with the question of changes and how do we deal with them in our stories.
We have the plot twist that we didn't plan for, the brick walls we run into with our story as we're writing, and suddenly we realize this isn't going to work. I'm like, chapter 12 to chapter 13 doesn't work. I need a chapter 12A now. And it's like, find something to put in there, write something in, that sort of thing. How do we deal with the changes like that? For me, often it's just, I have to just stop and think, all right, what's missing? Sometimes I'll just write a short bridge piece in between and just make a note and say, we need something else here. And usually that comes up later. That comes up in my rewrite, or I'll just go back around to it. And sometimes I'll just take a chapter and I'll just shuffle them. And sometimes they work. But that's different for each person. How do we deal with the changes as we're writing and suddenly we've been kicked off our groove? Where do we go?
Well, for me, I just, because as I mentioned earlier in the structure, I'll have two-thirds of it kind of just guidelined out. You know,
yes.
And as I write each section, I bold the guidelines. And so if I encounter a situation where, this is not going to work, I need to do something here, I'll probably just add a note in, a comment just to myself saying, hey, consider this, what do I need to do here? And then I'll wind up coming back and basically it's a flexible outline because I'll adjust it, I'll edit it after I've put enough thought into it to really fill it out and go, okay, this is what needs to happen. Then I'll do that, and then I'll write that scene.
I think you're...
Go ahead.
Yeah. So you're talking about, like, writing yourself into a corner, or when you realize that, you know, your plot steps that seemed so nice and straightforward ended up with, like, a line has to say, a miracle occurred, generally I go back to the outlining stage. I've used post-it notes, I've used 3x5 cards, I've used just my journal and lots of circles with arrows trying to figure out what are the things that need to happen for the plot, what are the things that I really want to happen because they're going to be nice, juicy, emotional scenes, and then choosing which of those darlings has to die. I was just working on a novel, and I mean, I had the ending I wanted, and I kept the ending I wanted, but the lead up to the ending wasn't working, and I ended up just deleting 10 chapters. But the funny thing is that, like, after I, and I kept, you know, I mean, I kept it in another document.
Okay, I was about to ask.
I kept it in
like,
another document.
Did you actually just go, delete? Or did you copy paste?
Copy paste. No, copy, cut, paste. But yeah, and the funny thing is that, like, you know, of those 10 deleted chapters, and I pasted small sections in from them, and there was one that was like in the first, this is actually like the third draft of this novel, and there was a scene in the first draft which I had cut for the plot that didn't work. But I went back and grabbed that and put it back in. But for some reason, chapter 27 is still chapter 27. It just survived in the center of that. And I found that very amusing.
Actually, I've got a weird situation going on right now. So when I was first getting started writing, I out of nowhere sat down and wrote an opening line to a short story. And I don't know where it came from. I don't know where it started. I had not had any sort of a plan for this. It just took off. And that opening line for that short story is, imps make a squishy sound when I step on them. That's probably one of my favorite opening lines that I've ever written. So all of a sudden, I'm writing this story, and I'm kind of off to the races on it, and I can't quite figure out why I'm writing this, but it's taken off, and I'm laughing about it, I'm having fun with it. One of the few things I've ever written is a complete pantser kind of story. I ended up getting an honorable mention for that at Writers of the Future. And I still haven't sold it anywhere.
Is this the one you were telling
me
about?
Yes,
yes.
I ended up, it is actually printed in my collection of short stories. I never sold it, but I did print it in my own collection. I have now written several stories in that world and sold them, some for pro rates. And I have been working off and on over the last few years on a novel set in that world. So now, here is I'm trying to finish up this novel, and I finally plotted the rest of the novel out and have it all planned. I got an invitation for a short story for an anthology, and all of a sudden I had this great idea. Now, I will tell you, this is a very funny, it's a Demon Busters kind of thing, and so I wrote this short story involving Satan and s'mores at a campsite. And then I realized that I had set up the novel in such a way that Satan is going to come into play at the end of the novel as well. And so now I'm stuck on a way of how do I make them both work? Because it's the same characters in the same world. And so what I'm trying to do is figure out where it fits timeline-wise in order to see if I can't resolve the difference in my head between the two stories.
Well, if there's about a 30-year difference, you can make one to the son or to the daughter.
Yeah, that's not really, we're within months,
okay?
But the question is figuring out, if I can sit down and figure out where all the different stories fall on the timeline, as opposed to just being random stories set in this world, I think I can solve my conundrum between the two stories. So that's another way to do it, too, is if you're writing related stories and you're finding yourself in a corner, that's one way to figure it out, is to sit down and say, what order do these all happen in, so that I can figure out who's affecting what.
Sometimes you got to sit down and make a what's the word? The timeline.
Yeah. Sometime. So that's what I'm having to do right now.
Yeah.
Well, and I have that same problem in the Sweet Dream series, because it's like back when I started writing the first book, Searching for Roy Buchanan, the rest of them just wrote themselves after. And finally, now that three are finished, I was looking at the fourth book, and I'm like, uh-oh, we got a problem. Because what is supposed to happen in the fourth book is happening too far down the road for the characters. The ages are off. Mm. And it's just not going to work. So it's like, okay, I'm shuffling the series, and I'm pulling the idea that I had way down the road, now is coming up, and now I have to take that, as bare bones as it was, and now I have to filter in parts of the fourth book that are timely, because I had set books 3 and 4 5 years apart to let the Aki and the gang grow up, let them breathe. And then suddenly I realized that the character who is really going to be important for the rest of the series is still too young to really be useful or to be able to articulate what is happening with her and why she exists in the first place. So it's like, okay. So I had to basically drop within the timeline the story down here, part of this, part of that, where it's finally starting to make some sense. And then by the time, you know, book 4 now becomes book 5, now this character can do what she is supposed to do, which I had planned for her in the first place. And we got a little bit more backstory within on why she is the way she is. And it's like sort of like Aki's kind of like, the kid's acting a certain way, but she doesn't think anything of it.
So I think the message here isn't just about structuring a specific story. It's also about structuring a series or a group of stories that all are in the same world.
Exactly.
And figuring out how they all work together. Because you don't want to contradict yourself on your world building. You don't want to contradict your characters and how you've set them up. And so if you're melding different things together in a bigger world, even worse if it's a shared world with somebody else, you know, you do kind of have to... Have you guys ever done any of that? Like written in somebody else's world?
Yeah.
I've done some round robin for one of my
Short
story collections.
Yeah, that's one of those things that it can get real interesting.
But that gives the fans something to write your letters about.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just doing a shared world thing right now, which is kind of interesting. My writing workshop read it a couple weeks ago, and they were like, wow, what interesting world building. I'm like, it's not mine. I think you should come up with better names for the alien races. Can't. But honestly, I was afraid that I had done a little bit too much inventing in my story, because there were things in the World Bible that were, you know, left open. But what I find is most people, this is me going on a tangent, but if you're offered to write in a shared world universe, don't be afraid to invent anything that is not in the World Bible. They will love you for it. They will go like, oh my gosh, this is so good.
But definitely read the World Bible.
Oh yeah, definitely read the World Bible. Yeah. You know, yeah, the shard are octopuses. They have three hearts. That's what they are. But I elaborated some things based on what I like about real octopuses. So anyway, I wrote about octopus aliens. It was fun.
But would you have done that if you didn't have, like, invitation to work in the shared world?
Right, I wouldn't have. I mean, I do like octopuses, but yeah, I guess that it got me to write this story, so yeah. It was fun.
We'll finish with questions and comments from the audience when the Brown Posey Press Show continues.
Sunbury Press Books is the home of independent and diverse authors. Check out the Agency Books imprint for detective stories, tales of law enforcement, espionage, terrorism, spy thrillers, and more. Among the works available, KGB Banker by William Burton McCormick, The Apologist, a Luke Lundy novel by A.A. Weiss, and Douglas Brody's Sand or Once Upon a Time in the Jazz Age. Find these and other fascinating books at sunburypress.com.
The final segment of the CLECON Roundtable, Structuring Your Story, concludes with questions from the assembled.
Addie, this is pretty much for you because, I have this story idea which is nothing but a first line. And it's killing me because I can't figure out how to make the rest of the story. How did you do it with your first line?
What was the first line again?
Imps make a squishy sound when I step on them. And then the question I had for myself was, why would somebody be stepping on a bunch of imps? I mean, I had this great line, but it was, why would this even sentence even come into somebody's head? Like, what would be going on that someone would even have this thought? Okay, well, if somebody is squishing aliens or imps or whatever it was with their feet, why would they do that? Why would they need to do that? And all of a sudden, I've got this scene in my head of somebody stopping an imp infestation at a fast food restaurant. Okay, and I was like, no, I'm not ready to go there. And then it became, well, why would somebody squish imps anyway if it wasn't that? Now, I have actually written that fast food scene in a different part of the story. But I came back to, well, if you're fighting demons and imps are only a few inches tall, what's the easiest thing to do with them?
Stomp
them. Okay, so if I've got somebody out there stomping them, why are they stomping them? Well, there must be an infestation somewhere. And then I'm off to the races. Why would you be responding to an imp infestation? Well, if you're thinking infestation, we must be talking about exterminators, right? But if they're imps, they're not exactly insects, what kind of exterminator would do that? And so I kept asking those questions. And then I ended up with this scene of this woman who had gotten a job as a demon buster, really didn't know what she was getting into, and she's out there stomping these imps with her cheap tennis shoes and talking about imp goo getting all over her shoes and her pants and all of that.
She got to talk to OSHA.
So, exactly.
Basically interview yourself.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. And so, yeah, I was sitting at my grandmother's kitchen table and cackling to myself as she kept walking and going, what is wrong with you? I told her and she looked at me and went, okay, that might not be a story up my alley.
Another thing is I have had stories that started with like just one line. Well, We Built This City started with the line, every morning, Julia climbs the city her mother built. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's a good line. Mm-hmm. I got to write something about that. But what I do is I have my idea file. So, like, a cool first line is an idea. A character is an idea. You know, the daughter of construction worker who never got out of blue-collar work and made her parent disappointed in her was an idea in my idea file. Floating city on Venus was an idea in my idea file. Write something with labor rights in space was an idea in my idea file. And then I just kind of jammed all those ideas together to create the story.
How do I keep integrating the different ideas as I go?
Well, yeah, if there's, it's just like, that's why I have an idea file, because I'm like, you know, if if I'm trying to write a story and there's something missing, I just go to the spice cupboard and see what I have that I've been wanting to write.
Again, I had started with this idea of this imp infestation at a fast food restaurant. And I went, this is so ridiculous, there's no way. This is not going to work. So I decided I wasn't going to write that scene. And so I ended up with this other scene with squishing the aliens and all of... Or I keep saying aliens, I don't know why. It's been a very long day. But I was squishing imps in this story and talking about why she was doing that and all of that and why they had like garden sprayers full of holy water and things of that nature. I reused the fast foods idea at the beginning of the novel I'm trying to finish now. So it is the opening chapter of the first novel in that, hopefully, that series. So I didn't let it go to waste. I've enjoyed writing both scenes, and I think both of them fit the stories for what they are. So, I didn't discard them the same way Marie was talking about.
I don't kill my darlings so much as recycle them.
I like that. I like that a lot.
That's well said.
And then you drop
into a
sugar.
Oh, no.
You see that Double Meat Palace episode of Buffy?
Right?
Yes.
I'm gonna make like Phil Donahue.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, you're gonna...
I'm just going to go.
We don't
make everybody get up and walk up to us. That would be terrible. What is your question?
My question is this. What I'm hearing is tremendous imagination on the part of some of you. And there's a guy by the name of Dean Wesley Smith. Does that ring a bell with any of you? He's a well-known writer, but apparently not well-known here. Anyway, he's married to Chris Brush, who apparently is a well-known writer, somebody does know who I'm talking about. But he has a book about how to write a novel, and he writes, and at the end of the day, he writes down what he wrote. But the thing is that fiction as a reader, I'm talking as a reader, fiction is an addictive process. It is an addictive process. And if you don't keep the addiction up, the reader stops reading because they're not getting their fix.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys sound like you've got the way to find the fix because, you know, curiosity, danger, these are the two biggies. Anyway, that was not a question, was it? It was sort of like a comment. Anyway. Oh, it might.
It makes me feel good, like I know what I'm doing. But did you have anything specific?
No, just do you all do that? Do you all realize that you're trying to get, you're actually addicting somebody, that you're actually doing an addiction that's possibly not, maybe not harmful, but maybe is?
I have a very specific answer for that question, which is, so I always wanted to be a writer, and when I was like 11 or 12 years old, I got my sister to write a team write story. Like, I would write a paragraph, she would write a paragraph, and we'd pass it back and forth. And then my passages get longer and longer, and hers got shorter and shorter. And she was like, she's like, Grace, all you wrote was "and then." She's like, I want to read yours. And so I was like, do you want me to just take over? Yes! And that's when I discovered the cliffhanger. Because I was ending my chapters, I was ending my sections in cliffhangers all the time. And I was definitely doing it just to enjoy torturing my sister.
I'm going to actually dovetail on that a little bit. And I know I keep doing this, but we talk about readers And that dopamine kick, that addicting them to what you're talking about, you do realize that when people tell us they like what we've written, it's the same thing.
It's a dopamine
so
kick, yeah.
When we write, we're pleasing ourselves as we write. We're entertaining ourselves. And if we're not entertaining ourselves, we know there's a problem. But when we put it out there and people like it, it's, oh, I got to do more of that.
Well, Mary Esther really made a really good point about addiction. And I think when you dive into any kind of artistic venture, whether it's music or painting or as we write, we're writers, we're authors. First and foremost, we really do write for us. Mm-hmm. We do this for our enjoyment. We do it to fill time. We do it as therapy. And I talked about this without realizing it in a panel earlier today. Sometimes it's really hard to, put the muse down. And one author said, if you don't continue to please the muse, it runs away and you lose it. The hardest part for me was, it wasn't so much that I wasn't writing anything, because I always told people, I am writing up here in my head. Mm-hmm. I'm still working, that's all these are. And one of the cool things that we can do for ourselves to make that ego happy, and it's also a worthwhile thing, is when you go back and read over something you've written that isn't published yet, but you're getting it ready, you're editing it, that's the chance that you can take the joy in what you did. It's like, I wrote a 300-page novel, holy shit, and you look at the work that you did. You look at the hours you put into it, and it comes back to you. And sometimes it feels like you are reading somebody else's work, and you're like, what is this? But for me, it's like, the more I do that, when I take the time to do it, the more I realize how cool this is. We did something nobody thought we could do. We did something we didn't think we could do. And
oh, we did something we needed to do.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the pandemic was rough for a lot of writers. A lot of us either wrote like crazy pants or didn't write at all. And I was one of those that really struggled. Of course, I was dealing with a lot of anxiety. I was in person, in court, almost all the way through. It was a train wreck. And then I got an opportunity. I got invited to write a short story for an anthology. And it turned into a story about catharsis. And it wasn't the kind of funny and overtly funny or tongue-in-cheek or anything that I normally would do. It was a COVID loss story. And it was something apparently I needed to get off my chest. Like I said, it's totally abnormal from anything I'd ever done. And after that story left, sent it off in the email, all of a sudden I was starting to write other stuff again. Now, I still struggle some days to get my brain out of what I've done all day and into, what I want to write at night. But for some reason, that story broke that logjam in a way that I didn't see coming. And like I said, it's totally not anything I've ever done before.
But you got you were put into a position where you got an opportunity to break out into something else eventually.
Yeah.
My pandemic story is not quite the same as other people, but I want to tell you what happened. Because of my job, or my alleged job, I was considered an essential employee during the pandemic. So I got a letter from my employer, and I got a card to put in on the dashboard of my car in case the police saw it. So 5 days a week, I was out to do my job. Okay. Well, I had a weekend job, and it was a weekend thing that I had done for a long time. And right when the pandemic hit, my boss called me and said, hey, we are laying a bunch of people off because somebody brought COVID into one of the buildings. We had to sweep the building out. We had to clean everything out. We are furloughing you and just about everybody. And I thought, oh, okay. I didn't like the job anyway. But it had gotten to that point. And then suddenly, for the first time in almost 9 years, I didn't have to go somewhere on Saturday and Sunday, which was a shock.
And you had time to do.
And I just thought, what am I going to do? And I knew exactly. I sat and pretty much every Saturday and Sunday for a long period after that, I went through all of my old writing, the unpublished writing, even the stuff that I wrote over a decade ago and just shelved and said, this is awful. And I thought, I have time. I've wanted to do this anyway. I'm going to make the best use of it. And I just sat and edited and rewrote practically everything that I did not publish or never thought I would. And some of it got rewritten and some of it got cleaned up. And I just had the most incredible fun every weekend to just look at all this stuff and look at my growth. Look how far I came, because I started writing seriously in 2007. The pandemic hit, and I had several things, some of which I still do not believe are publishable.
I think that's everybody.
I just don't think they're that good. They're good, but they're... Yeah, I'll get to them one day.
They aren't all winners.
Right.
But there might be something in there that you can use in something else.
That's what I've found. And so the great joy of doing it and realizing we've done something and now we're going to do more. You were going to say?
I was going to say, on the idea of looking back at your old works, I've been doing that some too. Because believe it or not, I do get blocked. Okay? And writer's block is not the inability to write. It's just the belief that everything you write is shit. I know. But
but when you know it's true.
But when you know it's true.
You start something new.
Because whether it's true or not, you know it.
But, yeah, recently I found an old story. I was just looking through my hard drive. I found a story that I wrote in, like, 2003, I think. And I was like, well, past me, you had no idea how to structure a story, but there's really good writing here. And I feel this is an appropriate example specifically for this panel, because what I did was not so much rewrite the story as reorder the story. Mm-hmm. The story, you know, it opened with a person with a problem, which she solves. And then she has another problem, which she solves. And then she has another problem, which she solves. And all I had to do was take those "and she solves it" outs. And so she has a problem and another problem and another problem. And then she solves one and solves the other and solves the first one. And suddenly, literally just copy-pasting paragraphs by introducing structure, which is something that I had learned in the meantime, I turned a story that was not saleable, that had been rejected a lot, and I turned it around and I sold it. 17 years after I wrote it.
Well, we are right at the time here, and I will say this. This has been exactly what I hoped it would be. I have just learned an awful lot about structuring stories, the things that we do, and everybody's style is a little bit different. And I think the message for anybody here is the way you write, there are no hard and fast rules. There is no right or wrong about how you set a story up, whether you just take off and roll with it, or if you take your time and map it out like an order of battle. It's your creation. It's your story. It's your thing. Mm-hmm. Make it yours. Keep it yours. And I think we all agree. We've all had a hell of a lot of fun, haven't we? Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, all of you, for contributing. Thank you all for coming, and this was a good time. All the best to y'all. My thanks to my fellow authors for their allowing me to record this. This hopefully provides the listener with insight into each of our writing styles, how we deal with issues, and the kind of fun one can have with the craft. Again, we sincerely thank all who made Cleveland Concoction a success. The 2025 CleCon has been set for March 7th through the 9th, and you can follow clevelandconcoction.org to find out more.
You've been listening to the Brown Posey Press Show with your host, Tory Gates. Find his works, including Searching for Roy Buchanan, Call It Love, and Shake Hands with the Devil, along with more independent authors of fiction and nonfiction at sunburypress.com. Thank you for listening. This is the BookSpeak Network.